Hi, this is Dr. Carl Goldkamp. If you're interested in learning about the ketogenic diet like I was, to save my own life, then this is probably the podcast for you. 8 years ago, I knew nothing about it. 6 years ago, it saved my life. 3 years ago, I started researching and talking with some of the authorities in the field and attending medical conferences about this to understand why and how keto so dramatically changed my and my wife's Judy's lives. The purpose of this podcast is to share our journey of discoveries with you and understanding how keto is so effective in improving so many different conditions, from obesity, epilepsy, diabetes, infertility, MS, Alzheimer's, heart disease, to name a few. So take a step away from all the hype you've probably heard and roll up your sleeves with me and join me weekly to explore this living miracle that anyone can access. We'll talk science, we'll talk food. We'll explore its history and evolution to today, which is that the sheer wonder of the ketogenic way of eating has changed untold number of lives, unlike anything before it. And in case I forget to mention it, please join our Facebook group, Keto Naturopath. Hi, this is Dr. Goldkamp, and welcome back to another episode of the Keto Naturopath. I wanted to provide yet another rejoinder in talking with Dr. Christopher Palmer, a psychiatrist from Harvard. And the interview is going to be, it's so dense with material and so enjoyable to listen to. And I hope you have the curiosity that I have, because we go into a lot of detail in related areas. We stay on track about the ketogenic diet being applied to various behavioral disorders and why that might be something rather sensational. And my view of this, but my own personal experience in working with patients, not as articulated as Dr. Palmer has been and is currently, was that I actually think that this is the big application, the main application of the ketogenic diet. So when people do keto, and it's sort of been devalued by a lot of stupid comments and dumb keto products that are out there making their quick buck and saying things that aren't true. But when you work with people bringing in the ketogenic diet and transitioning your life to, in essence, a different lifestyle, that's why we call it a ketogenic lifestyle, that the reason they stay on this is they like the weight loss and these other things. They feel good. They feel better. They feel good. They have more energy. They like themselves. And we're going to go into them liking themselves a little more in this particular section, but it's them liking themselves. It's the slightly increased GABA and related neurotransmitters that are inhibitory versus excitatory. And it doesn't mean it inhibits you. It means it slows you down a little bit, gives you that moment of reflection, the moment of perhaps introspection, but you like yourself more. There's not a person who I didn't meet, know, work with in the ketogenic diet that after a week or two, they realize, you know, I'm a different person. I think this is the person that's been inside me that I have this, you know, that voice in the back of my head. The voice in the back of my head is no longer in the back of my head. It's in the front of my head. It's me. And that's real joy to hear that and to see that expressed. So it's a transformation. So in that, I wanted to go over just some of the points that we will cover in this next coming 45 minutes in talking with Dr. Palmer. They're all very deep and wonderful. And so, you know, we talk about his background, you know, that what he ate before, he wasn't a keto guy in his childhood. And he's so candid about that he learned. He grew up pretty much the same generation as myself. There were cereals, they were mac and cheese, and you add sugar to your cereal, and amazing, put a sugar on your grapefruit. So that was where he had come from, and he transitioned into Atkins after he got out of med school for his various reasons, and story is interesting. But when we start drilling down into some of his examples, one was, we were talking about getting energy from the ketogenic diet, and how is that? You're getting energy from the ketogenic diet. I guess to be more specific, you have to say that people feel more energetic. They feel they can do more things on the ketogenic diet. So he had an example. He says there was a patient for 2 years who was saying you may want to drop your carbs and start a ketogenic diet. So 2 years he's been saying that. So finally, she started doing that And he didn't know when she started doing it, but when she came in for her appointment, she said, guess what? He goes, what? I went to the gym and I forgot about the part. He'd been advising her to go to the gym for the last 2 years. She said, I went to the gym. And why was it she went to the gym? She felt she had more energy because of the ketogenic diet. So it took 2 years for that to happen. And so it does take time. It takes time for one to think maybe they can do it. Sometimes they think it's complicated. When you start doing it, you realize, does a diet get any simpler than this? Really? The biggest connection in the heart of the conversation, certainly in this part of it, is the connection with behavioral disorders and diabetes. You know, why are they so closely connected? Behavioral disorders and epilepsy. Why are those medications used similarly in both categories? You know, why are seizures reduced? They still don't know the answer to that in epilepsy. But if you look at episodes of psychiatric disorders, behavioral disorders such as schizophrenia, bipolar, and others, that it's pretty much the same degree of mechanism. And it's the bringing down, making you less hyperactive, you know, making you reflect more on your actions, making you have a greater degree of contentment. And so it happens with these patients. You bring down that level of frenetic activity, that hyperactivity, and I'm using those words very generally, that what happens? People kind of tend to change and their disorders kind of melt away. So if that happens on a ketogenic diet, and here's the reframe I'm going to ask you to think about. If that happens on a ketogenic diet, what is the unusual diet? Is it the ketogenic diet? Or is it the way we used to eat? Why was it normal to eat artificial cereals and tons of sugar and all these processed foods? How is that? That's the norm for the culture we're in. But clearly, it's not the norm for life in general as we knew it on this planet Earth for the last million plus years. So we're now asking ourselves, what is the normal diet? What is the real diet? And what we collectively, people who are aware of the ketogenic diet and its various applications, we're up against the commercial forces that come from, that they have a vested interest in that other cultural norm. And now we're saying, no, you're the weird thing. The ketogenic diet is the weird thing. Absolutely, it's not. I see it in a lot of the literature, a lot of the studies that I read. Studies come out because they need to find funding. Where do you find funding if you can get behind supporting something? I mean, you perhaps have noticed that on some of my podcasts. Some people, we just didn't get into that area because their area of funding was not in that area. And whether they knew a truth or not, they weren't going to go there. So that's just the reality where we're at. So with diabetes, which is obviously rampant in our patient, in our population in the United States now, North America now, that for schizophrenics in general, that schizophrenics in general have 3 times higher rate of diabetes. So, you know, why is that? I'm just looking for connections and correlations, because what is novel about Dr. Palmer, and he's one of the pioneers, and maybe there's one or two others that we get into in the course of the podcast, is that he's trying to look for metabolic interventions. What can he do to change that, that is not drug-based, that is not surgery-based? Thinking like a naturopath, if you ask me. But so that's what we're looking for. So when you see these correlations between epilepsy and diabetes, epilepsy and behavioral disorders, you know, then you go, what helped with epilepsy can help with these other things as well. And you're right on. We might not have the definitive answer of why. We have certain clues, you know, why certain neurotransmitters change and why they're produced and inflammation goes down and so on. It's a repetitive sort of discovery, but this is in a different area. When I have some people that are listening to this, thinking about their husbands and wives and children that could very much use this, and they don't have somebody down the street or a doctor that they could consult to say, how, you know, my wife is on 8 different psychiatric medications and she's going crazy. What can I do? Well, you're not going to have a Dr. Palmer right down the road, but what you can do is have your doctor, assuming you have a good doctor, have your doctor contact Dr. Palmer. And that link is in the show notes. And so that's what you can do. Please contact this guy. He's a psychiatrist at Harvard, lives up in Massachusetts, and he's In fact, you can even go on YouTube and find some of his past talks. So your doctor won't feel you've put him against the wall. And if he's at all compassionate about your situation, in the very least, he will look at that. Okay? So that's your go-to activity that you can apply. So you have to participate in this. This is not just, we're now at the edge, we're now at discovering, and now we're trying to support people who are really bringing something remarkable to a much larger area of people that have previously been ignored. We talked about the idea of a residential treatment program, ketogenic based, in which you do, you know, the nutritional ketogenic diet and other things to basically transform people's behavioral disorders into fulfilling lives where they can find value and they can find meaning in their life. That's a sensational thought. And it's very similar to, if you remember, Dr. Westman thinking things like that as well. I'm going over my notes because so much was covered. Basically on that, Dr. Palmer says, you know, the masses have to speak up. The masses being me, the masses being you, have to call our doctor and saying, contact this guy. He knows what he's doing and maybe he can point you in the right direction to help me. Okay. We go back through the history of low carb and ketogenic diet, and low carb actually goes back certainly to the early 1800s in the United States, 1825. So that's not a new idea. That's the point of going back that far. Ketogenic diet, as you know, is over 100 years old. Started with Dr. Russell, Dr. Peterman at the Mayo Clinic, specifically for epilepsy. But they both came out of a kind of either calorie restriction and or fasting and what happens in both those states. And in both those states do improve psychiatric disorders. Not a lot of research on that. That's what this is about. We know that GABA, which is an inhibitory neurotransmitter, increases. That's the calm. That's in essence the heart of what a benzodiazepine does. It tries to hit your GABA receptors and it makes you slow down. That's why benzodiazepines are tranquilizers in essence. A little bit higher volume than what we're talking about in a ketogenic diet, but GABA is the opposite of what they call a glutamate excitation. So they're opposites, a seesaw opposites. Now, here's something interesting. What you'll find is that, you know, there's a lot of what they call excitotoxicity or glutamatergic excitation neurologically, and that's in a lot of kids with ADHD. It's in stroke patients at the time of the stroke and subsequent for a while. And not only that, it is in a lot of preservatives. You have SMG, monosodium glutamate, and other forms of glutamate that are basically excitatory toxins. You don't see any additives that are glutamine that are GABA based, and I'm not looking for them, by the way. I'm encouraging you to get away from all processed foods. But the point was here, it's in a lot of the foods we have. Why would it be unusual to find a lot of people that are so revved up on the food they're eating? We're not just talking coffee here. Take out the caffeine variable. We're talking about sugar. We're talking about and the preservatives that are added to that directly affect. And I want to impart just a little story here on my part is that, oh, maybe about 5 or 6 years ago in my practice, there was an elderly couple that came in with their adult son who had been dismissed from work due to being schizophrenic. And he had these, and bipolar. And so he was on medication and they brought him to the naturopath saying, well, maybe you can do something that hasn't been done before. So I go through the whole history, I look at his blood work, and I don't have a great protocol. It's a very sort of dangerous edge to work at, but I can change his diet. So I asked him to get all his processed foods and we just focused on that. Well, apparently in 4 weeks, all his symptoms disappeared. He went back to work, was gainfully employed, but he wanted to lose weight. Unbeknownst to me, he wanted to lose more weight than he had already lost, which had lost a good 10 or 15 pounds. So he bought some particular weight loss product. I think it was Jenny Craig. And these were full of the preservatives. And he got crazy again. He got so crazy that he went driving, this is in Southern Connecticut, he went driving 120 miles an hour with the police chasing him to get into the hospital emergency room, which was closed in the middle of the night, and he was banging on the door of the emergency room with a gun because he needed to get in. So he knew he was getting crazy, but he didn't know what to do about it. And that had to do with the food. So I'm hoping you see the whole spectrum of what we're talking about here and that its application. It's not just medications and drugs. They're part of it, but it really is something metabolic, something you can do that will change your metabolism, that will change your behavior. And I'll leave it at that. There's so many other things we went into. It's a total joy to talk to Dr. Palmer. And if you're thinking about something in somebody in your family that you need to have treatment, in the very least, you can have your doctor call and you'll see a link on the show notes for Dr. Palmer. And there'll be more coming. We'll follow up on another talk with Dr. Palmer down the road after you all ingest this. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed doing it. I'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely. So, Chris, you must have a like-spirited doc out there, whether it's on the West Coast or another country, that has the same spark of realization that you do. I mean, I can't imagine you're working in a closet with your own successes. There's certainly, thank God you showed up at the conference, and there'll be other conferences you'll be speaking at, I have no doubt. But in that, you know, getting the nucleus of those people together saying, you know, how can we push this idea down the road? Is there one or two other people that at least you have a conference call once a year to say, you know, what are we going to do to make this happen? Or, you know, is this is a conversation that gets to be talked about outside of this conversation?
It is, fortunately for me. So there is a group of researchers led by Professor Zoltan Sarnaya. He's in Australia. Mm-hmm. They have been doing mouse studies demonstrating that the ketogenic diet can normalize behaviors and even cognition in a mouse model of schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. There is a young researcher at Oxford University, and he and I have done some work. Javier Gilbert, he mm-hmm. and I have done some work. He's from Ecuador, and we actually treated two schizophrenic patients in Ecuador.
Wow.
Impoverished, a very different culture with a very different diet that really yeah. looks to rice and plantains as kind of a staple of every meal. And we got them to do the diet and found improvement in them. And there are some other researchers and clinicians that I'm collaborating with, the interesting, kind of frustrating, kind of sad thing for me is that those people and the others that I'm collaborating with are not mental health clinicians. Mm-hmm. And so right now, I've corresponded with at least a dozen psychiatrists who are interested/supportive
right.
of low-carb or ketogenic diets because they do it themselves. But when I ask them, how many patients have you actually done this diet with? The answer so far to date has been zero.
Oh my gosh.
And there is one clinician that I know of, Dr. Childers, out in the West, who is using different dietary approaches, including like a low carb or a ketogenic approach. Mm-hmm. But I believe she is only working with people who have anxiety or ADHD or maybe mild depression.
Right.
Not most of the people are unwilling to work with people with bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or even severe chronic disabling depression. Mm-hmm. Most of the people are just unwilling to work with them, in part because those disorders are serious disorders. They really are.
Right.
The intervention and the treatment for them is not just teach them how to do keto and everything's going to go fine. They have psychosis. Mm-hmm. They have suicidal thoughts. Sometimes they even have homicidal thoughts. Sometimes they can get aggressive and agitated. And all of that needs to be managed and in the context of implementing a treatment that unfortunately doesn't work overnight, but neither does any pill, neither does even ECT. So we're talking about a treatment that can take weeks or even a couple of months to work. And you have to get the person to do the treatment. You have to get them through any side effects or keto adaptation or other problems that can ensue. And you have to keep them safe through the process because of their ongoing symptoms. And it's sad. So in that way, I feel alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's a little sad because I'm actually turning patients away every single week. Heartbreaking stories of people who have read about the work I'm doing, who have been told there's nothing more that can be done, that, you know, your loved one has schizophrenia, your loved one has schizoaffective disorder, your loved one has disabling, crippling bipolar disorder. There's nothing more we can do for you. Sucks to be you. Just, you know, lower your expectations. Just understand that they've got a chronic disorder. They will never work. They'll probably never get married. They'll probably never have a family. They'll never be able to live independently. Just wrap your brain around that and accept it, because that's where we're at. And there's no question that is where the field is currently at, where the field has been for a very long time. And I very much desperately want to change that.
Absolutely. You know, I don't know the word residency. I don't know what it takes to get a residency going, but that would be one small way of, I was going to use the word scale, but at least free your hands, you know, and getting, saying, this is what we need, what you need to do. And, you know, bringing in people to want to learn, but they'll do the scut work, for lack of a better word, so you can get further development in something else. But it has to start someplace. So we'll start with your closet. You know.
Nope. I think that sounds good. And, you know, one of the reasons I'm publishing in the literature, one of the reasons I'm blogging for Psychology Today now, yep, one of the reasons I'm out speaking at conferences, and I'm speaking with you today, is I am very much trying to spread the word and trying to motivate a lot of different people. I certainly want to motivate other mental health clinicians who already know about these disorders, who already have a skill set. They know how to manage medications. They know how to manage suicidality. They know how to talk to people who are psychotic. I want some of them to step up and learn about the ketogenic diet and how to implement it and how to implement it safely to be able to use it with patients. But I also do want to speak to patients and family members, because sometimes movements happen from the masses, from, yes, the ground up.
Yep.
And the masses have to speak up. They have to go to their local hospital. They have to go to their local psychiatrist and say, we want you to learn this treatment. Call Dr. Palmer. Like, right, learn about it. And there are ketogenic training programs. The epilepsy field already has plenty of them. Right. You know, Eric Westman certainly has programs through the HEAL Clinic. There are a lot of programs where clinicians can learn about this diet, the risks and the benefits and the monitoring that should probably happen. And so this is doable, but it's going to take a movement. It's going to take a movement, and I'm hoping to start a movement.
I think you are starting a movement. I mean, I've seen a ripple, and that's why I'm in touch with you. I wanted to ask two kind of more technical questions. One was, in, you know, as we get into looking at neurotransmitters, that's been sort of the conversation previously before keto in psychiatric disorders, and certainly, well, actually not so much in epilepsy, but they are still guessing how that works. What do you think of things like the GABA going up with keto and its relative influence on, let's say, you know, the whole addiction field of dopamine and or insulin, and or, you know, does any of that sort of interest you, or you go, well, you know, that's interesting, but it's all sequela. You know, it all happens if you get the right ducks in a row, and it's not something to tweak here, or really, we don't have to know about that first. But what are your thoughts about the whole neurotransmitter level?
No, it's a great question, and I am very, very much interested in it, because in my mind, you know, medicine, The field of medicine changes in a couple of different ways. One is empirical observation that something works.
Yeah.
And if it works, then sometimes you can convince people to try it. But nowadays, I think that that's less compelling to most medical practitioners and certainly to mainstream medical establishment. And most medical practitioners and mainstream medicine want a mechanism of action. They require a mechanism of action in order to give anything serious thought. And so I have been diving deep into all of the known mechanisms of action mm-hmm. of the ketogenic diet. And it's really interesting because, so one of the things that most people don't know, they hear the word keto or ketogenic diet and they think it's the latest fad diet.
Right.
And in some ways, it's certainly kind of the way it's being disseminated, at least by some people, it kind of it does have that flavor of being the latest trendy weight loss craze.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's interesting because the Atkins diet was in fact ketogenic, and Dr. Atkins talked about, you know, start with pretty much as much protein as you want and restrict your carbohydrates and you're good. But if you're not in ketosis, if those urine ketone strips are not positive, go all the way to a fat fast where all you do is eat fat and nothing more. Yeah. Zero carb. So Atkins said that, and it's interesting. So the ketogenic diet, you know, for epilepsy goes back to 1921. Low carb diets for weight loss go all the way back to 1825, as right. far as we can tell.
Right.
And so, so low carb diets have been around for a very long time and are not a fad. And one of the interesting things about the mechanism of action is because the ketogenic diet has been around for 100 years, and can sometimes work for epilepsy when all else has failed, we actually know more about the effects of this diet on the brain than any other dietary intervention, hands down, no contest, no, just unequivocally true. And why is that? Because neurologists have been studying this diet for decades already, mm-hmm. even before the health craze with the weight loss and using the word keto for weight loss instead of using the Atkins or low carb nomenclature.
Okay.
Neurologists have been studying this since the 1970s in kind of full force, basic biological researchers, brain researchers, neuroimaging studies, the whole works. Neurologists have been trying to figure out what in the hell is this diet doing that our beautiful Depakote isn't doing?
Mm-hmm.
What is this diet doing that brain surgery couldn't even do? And they've been looking for the mechanism of action, almost certainly in the hopes that they could develop a new drug that might right. be more effective.
Right.
And that's fine. Taking a pill is so much easier than doing a diet. I'm never going to argue that point.
Right.
It is true. And if somebody has one pill that can do everything that the ketogenic diet does, I would probably be the first to sign up for that pill.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think that probably is ever going to happen because the ketogenic diet is doing a tremendous number of things to our physiology. It just is. We know that. And there are at least probably 20 different mechanisms of action that have been elucidated already that would suggest why the ketogenic diet can stop seizures. But interestingly, and not surprisingly, at least not surprising to me, there's tremendous overlap between what it's doing to stop seizures and what it might do to help people with psychiatric symptoms. So you've mentioned increasing GABA. So GABA is the kind of primary inhibitory neurotransmitter in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that useful to epilepsy? It's useful to epilepsy because epilepsy is thought to involve hyper-excitable cells.
Mm-hmm.
So neurons or astrocytes or other cells in your brain become hyper-excitable, meaning they're kind of like a frayed wire. Like if you imagine an electrical wire that's got a little fray, that might spark a little and kind of spread to the neighboring cells. Mm-hmm. And GABA can slow that process or stop that process or reduce hyper-excitability. And so interestingly, we have a lot of medications that increase GABA activity. Mm-hmm. All of the benzodiazepines that we have increase GABA activity. All of the sleep medications pretty much across the board, other than maybe antihistamines and maybe a small handful of other things like trazodone, but almost all of the sleeping medications, things like Ambien and others in those classes, they all affect the GABA system, and they all enhance GABA activity. And so we know that increasing GABA activity has a lot of clinical benefits. It makes people sleep, and when we want them to sleep. But if you give lower doses, it can take the edge off. It can just make people feel more relaxed, less anxious, less overwhelmed. If they're seizing, it might stop their seizure. And so increasing GABA does a lot of really useful things. And we know that this diet does that. We know that this diet also increases the activity of adenosine. Mm-hmm. So adenosine has a similar action on the brain. It is what helps us sleep. Coffee blocks adenosine receptors. Mm-hmm. And so coffee, by blocking that receptor, helps people feel awake and alert. But adenosine is actually critically important in terms of slowing us down at night and allowing us to sleep at night. Right. And then glutamate is the primary excitatory neurotransmitter. We know that in cases of stroke, that there's a thing called glutamate excitotoxicity. Mm-hmm. So we know that too much glutamate can be toxic to the brain. And we know that too much glutamate activity is associated with not only seizures, but a whole host of other disorders, including things like schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. surprisingly. Mm-hmm. And we know that the ketogenic diet decreases glutamatergic activity. Now, obviously, we would never want to stop glutamatergic activity because our brains would be dead. But it's about getting the right balance. So people talk about a chemical imbalance as the cause of psychiatric disorders. And even if that's true, we need to come up with ways to get a better balance. And there's a lot of evidence that the ketogenic diet maybe increases some of the inhibitory signals and maybe decreases some of the excitatory signals in ways that are clinically beneficial to people with certain disorders. We also know that the ketogenic diet helps repair mitochondria. It helps, it increases production of new mitochondria. We know that the ketogenic diet, ketone bodies themselves seem to have an anticonvulsant effect. We know that the ketogenic diet ends up having a lot of anti-aging effects on the brain and the body. Ketone bodies are known to stimulate these genes called sirtuin genes. And sirtuin genes are known to be the primary mechanism of action of the anti-aging effect seen with calorie restriction. Mm-hmm. So with animals, if you calorie restrict them all the way from single-celled yeast all the way up to primates, we can't say definitively with humans because we can't lock human beings up in a chamber for 10 years and calorie restrict them and see if they age, at a slower rate. So being able to definitively say that it works in humans, we can't do yet and probably never will be able to do, at least not for a long time. But we can say that it works for pretty much every other organism on the planet.
Right.
And the ketogenic diet ends up stimulating some of those same pathways that result in an anti-aging effect. And this anti-aging effect you know, not aging sounds great and good, but the much more important thing about all of the anti-aging research that's going on is that it's really about improving and maintaining health while you age.
Right.
Although it does extend the lifespan, and some people are interested in that, I think the overwhelming majority of people are actually much more interested in extending there's this new term now called the health span.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people are much more interested in extending and prolonging the health span. And there's reason to think that low carb or ketogenic diets, I can't even say low carb. I have to say ketogenic in that in that case, because ketone bodies themselves have been found to activate some of the sirtuin genes themselves.
Right.
And so it does seem to be something about a ketogenic diet.
I agree. You know, it's interesting what you just said is that way back when I got started for my own reason and felt a lot of improvement, I had to go back to sort of just drill down to find out why would some of this work. So I went back to the history of the ketogenic diet. And so back when you look at Russell Wilder in 21, who coined the term, and Penniman is the one who did all the work on it, the way I read that. But you look at where were they in time? You know, they were just came through of, I'll call it a fad, from about 1990 to about 1890 to 1915, which fasting was the rage and fasting was the treatment for so many different things. There was even a guy in New England, an MD, if MDs were called MDs then, Dr. Allen, and he did a fasting diet for type 1 epileptics and then calorie restricting, you know, so they didn't die in a year. They died in 5 years from malnutrition, but it was effective until obviously insulin came in. But my understanding is that Dr. Russell Wilder said, you know, if we could find something like fasting, you know, something like fasting. And so what do you get in fasting? You get the ketones, you know? That was the thought. I don't know if he had much to do. I know that Woodyatt was his mentor but it generated, and he was a fascinating guy, but there was a eulogy, his eulogy, which I can't remember when that was. Nothing was mentioned about him being the coiner, if that's what, you know, a coiner or the inventor of the ketogenic diet. It was about all this other stuff. So it was just an interesting sort of like wish that they had that time, something like fasting that just doesn't end in death, you know, for everybody. But so when you talk about the sirtuins and the calorie restricted diet, well, it's from the same sort of thinking in a way, isn't it?
It is. No, it absolutely is. And interestingly, they are all metabolic interventions. They're all a way to significantly change metabolism. And you're right in terms of the history of the ketogenic diet. You know, so fasting being used as a treatment has pretty much been used in every culture and every religion that planet Earth has known. At some point or another, fasting has played a role. And, you know, for so long, and still to this day, I think the majority of Western society thinks that that's barbaric. They think that it's, you know, that it's like this old wives' tale or this kooky religious folklore, all those religious quacks. And those, you know, medicine men and women, they didn't know anything else, so they just fasted. And while they were at it, they threw some leeches on the person.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way most people still think of fasting, is that it's this barbaric, like stupid kind of way to go about treating any illness, anything that ails you. And, you know, even Hippocrates wrote about using fasting to treat epilepsy. Yeah. And for anybody who's into religion and Christianity in particular, even Jesus himself was quoted in the Bible as using fasting with an epileptic boy, because the boy's seizures weren't stopping with prayer alone. And he reportedly said, oh, with this kind of a case, you have to add fasting to it. Right. In order to get the boy to stop seizing.
That is so interesting. Also, you can even say, I love the Christianity theme, is like, you know, his 40 days in the desert, you know, when he finally met up with John the Baptist, is like, so he did he do that? Did he fast for mental clarity? I'm just a little tight with my life right now. I need to go away and think about this, and I'll stop eating, by the way.
I had not even thought of that, but that's an interesting... That's an interesting thing.
It's like a fallback. It's a fallback battery charge. Here we go. I got to get clarity. I'm out of here.
It is. But I think, you know, I think the epilepsy world at least caught on in the time that you described. In the late 1800s and the early 1900s, the epilepsy world put it to the test and really put it to some rigorous tests. And they found that it actually works for a real brain disorder. And, you know, they have, again, have been using it for 100 years. They've researched the hell out of it. We know a lot about what it is doing, and we understand why those things might, in fact, result in seizures stopping. We can't say 100%, like, is which one of those, you know, 20 mechanisms of action is the key one. Maybe it's all of them. Maybe all 20 are needed. Mm-hmm. Or maybe one mechanism of action is more critically important for one patient and a different mechanism of action is more effective for another patient. But who cares? So you're using a broad kind of treatment with a lot of effects. And I kind of feel like, though, the rest of the medical field needs to catch up.
Yeah.
with neurology on this one. That the neurologists... At least some of the neurologists have known this. You know, it's interesting because the ketogenic diet, even in neurology fields, I should point out, even in a lot of centers for epilepsy, it's not used. And there are neurologists who are still skeptical of it. And I think a lot of them are skeptical of it because it doesn't work immediately. They see these kids get admitted to the hospital. They get fasted for 24 hours. They start the ketogenic diet. 3 days later, they get discharged, and their seizures haven't changed one bit. Mm-hmm. And so I've spoken with some neurology residents at some pretty prominent teaching hospitals here in Boston, mm-hmm. who told me as much, who said, oh, that ketogenic diet, it doesn't even work. And I thought about that and reflected on that and thought, well, why would they say that? Because there's so much evidence that it does work. But what they see as a resident is they see a kid starting the ketogenic diet for 3 or 4 days and then getting discharged, and their seizures haven't changed one bit. Because like psychiatric disorders, the ketogenic diet takes weeks and sometimes months to actually work. That all of those effects, you know, you don't get an anti-aging effect overnight. It's not like all your wrinkles go away. It's not like all of your... It's not like all of your cells repair themselves. It's not like out with all the old cells and in with the new cells overnight because, oh, I've been in ketosis for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And so we know a lot of the mechanisms of action, and we know that a lot of those mechanisms probably do take time to play themselves out in the human body. Mm-hmm. And that you have to give the intervention an adequate amount of time to actually have a chance to work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Boy, Chris, I could talk for a whole afternoon. I haven't even gotten to my, I'm just going to throw this out. It's like, do you have for my, and we might not have time to answer it. It's like, when you have patients come in, do you say, I require, in terms of labs, a certain panel? Do you have a favorite panel? Do you have a favorite sort of saying, you know, I got to see this because this is going to change as well? Or do you go, you know, that's not my department. I don't want to do that. I want to look at the symptomology and work with the patients, and somebody else can do the blood work and send me their results. Where are you on that?
So it depends on the patient and it depends on the clinical situation. Certainly, if I'm using the ketogenic diet, I'm doing all the lab monitoring myself.
Okay.
You know, I start with a lipid profile because that's That's the one area where, as a practitioner, I'm worried about getting sued. I'm worried about some board of medicine coming after me because I didn't chase their LDL levels.
Yeah.
And so I make sure that I check their LDL levels. For a lot of psychiatric patients, there are a lot of vitamin deficiencies. There are hormone deficiencies, all the way from thyroid hormone to estrogen, progesterone, to testosterone. Cortisol, we know that cortisol is dysregulated in most people with psychiatric disorders, especially chronic disorders. Mm-hmm. What we can do about it is less clear. But so I tend not to check cortisol levels. Those other ones I definitely check because there's something we can do about those in terms of replacement. So a lot of vitamin levels.
Interesting. Do you know, he's also from Harvard, Joshua Rathman. Does he ring a bell?
I don't know him, no.
He did vitamin supplementation, the treatment of schizophrenia, 2014, Harvard Medical School. He teamed up with somebody from, what was the hospital? I don't know if it was Mass General or Brigham and Women's Hospital. But anyways, that's what he was doing as well in terms of the nutrient deficiencies. Merely an FYI. While I think of it, you know, on the cortisol dysregulation, this is just my hunch, and I brought it up as a discussion in the low-carb Facebook group, is I think that's secondary to, believe it or not, to glucagon. I bet if it's linked into glucagon, I mean, it's, you know, the other component there of blood sugars, and so obviously it's cortisol as well, is that it could be a handle of something we could treat. I'm thinking of metformin, but there's other ways of doing it too. I just don't have a comprehensive list. But those are my thinking on that aspect there as well, which might be another strong lever to work. Thoughts on that?
I have lots of thoughts, but I think so this is an area where I think it's a psychiatrist. Our field has kind of become really frustrated with cortisol.
Yeah.
and we've become really frustrated with cortisol. So in the 1980s and 1990s, we were all over cortisol. We thought finally, once and for all, we have an objective test to diagnose psychiatric disorders and to prove to the world these are real disorders, that we can measure something. When we measure that something, it's abnormal. We can maybe hopefully fix it. We can do something about it. We have been obsessing about cortisol. We still to this day talk about cortisol all over. There is no doubt in any psychiatrist's mind that cortisol plays a role in mental disorders.
Yeah.
No doubt. But what do we do with that information? How do we make a difference?
Yeah.
That is the thing that has just been so frustrating. We haven't even been able to come up with a really legitimate diagnostic test. And it's and with that, I want to say for the record, it's not for a lack of trying. Millions of dollars were spent looking at morning cortisol, suppression tests, all sorts of tests. Because our field was full of hope and excitement and enthusiasm that we could figure this out and turn it into at least a diagnostic test, maybe a marker of treatments that are working or not working or something. And at the end of the day, we still haven't been able to make heads or tails of right. what to do with the information. So I think that you're right. There is absolutely something there. We in psychiatry have known that for decades. What to do with it, how to use that information, even how to use that information clinically in terms of assessment, we don't know yet. And more importantly, how to use that information to help people who are suffering and how to improve their situation, we still don't know. And It's not that I'm hopeless about it, because I think there is something there. And so where there's a will, there's a way. And we as a field need to keep pursuing that and looking for answers. And someday, somehow, I'm hopeful that somebody will figure out what to do with that information and how to help people. But I don't know. As a psychiatrist, I'm a little burned out with that right now because we've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, Chris, I am going to have to let you go. You have been over the top generous with your time, and I could extract another couple hours of, because you're right at the edge, and you obviously have a curious mind because you wouldn't be looking into it, and you feel there's great value. And so I love when a topic is this way. It's your work. It's your life work. It's your meaning. And so I hope we will be talking again. What I'm going to say is, this probably won't be out for about a month. I will certainly forward you this, and it'll probably be a two-parter. And what I usually do is give what I call a prequel, which is a more about what you do and references to your articles and so on and so forth. So you can follow your work and keep you on their horizon to find out, you know, what you're doing. I just think it's incredible work. I think it's very exciting. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Awesome. No, it's been a pleasure talking with you. And thank you so much.
We will stay in touch. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Dr. Goldkamp. I thought I would take a moment of your time to tell you about something that we've been working on for a long time, and that is our product of C8 Keto MCT oil. How is it different, and why would you even care about it? It's the highest purity you can find in the market, which is 99.7% caprylic acid triglyceride. And by the way, that's backed up by a certificate of analysis. It's not just me making up these numbers. But I think the bigger story behind our C8 MCT oil is not only that it is the most efficient way for you to create ketones naturally, and that is all three ketones, your beta-hydroxybutyrate, your acetoacetate, and your acetone. That's important. But the other part is it supports sustainably harvested palm oil. Why would you care? Because all the other C8 oil products out there, not the MCT oils, but the C8 MCT oils, some people call them ketogenic oils out there, they come from palm oil and palm farming, specifically palm kernel farming in Southeast Asia, is decimating the rainforest there. Absolutely. You go on right now to Google or to YouTube and say palm oil Southeast Asia, and you will be in tears at the end of 10 minutes when you see the destruction that's happening. This is not part of that. This is the exception. So it's called RSPO, Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil. You have to apply for it. You have to be audited by them. And it's a long, rigorous process. And it took us 2 years to bring this product to market. I hope you care. And I know you'll care about the efficiency in which it helps you make ketones. By the way, we don't drink this like it's a fluid. We put a little bit in our coffee. We make our mayonnaise out of it. We make various salad dressings out of it when we have a salad. It's basically I hate to say crutch, but it's my aid to keeping me in ketosis when I want to be in ketosis. It's fast. It's long lasting, certainly longer lasting than exogenous ketones, and much more holistic, as I mentioned, with all three ketones. That's about as much as I want to say. I hope you look into it. I hope you take your ketones readings on a regular basis, as along with your glucose. If you do, then you really value this product. All the best, and I thought you should know.